Good afternoon. It's 5 o'clock on Tuesday, May the 3rd, and welcome to another What Comes Next Live. After a pause for a few weeks, we restarted last week. My guest this week is Philippa White of TIE, or the International Exchange. And through the wonders of social media networking, she connected with me based upon a previous guest, John Alexander, whose book Citizens was recently published. Yeah. He was a guest a while ago, and I definitely encourage you to buy his book and also read up on his ideas about what it means to be a citizen. So, Philippa, we've not met. We've connected through LinkedIn and social, and I'm very happy to have you on board. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Tom. It's such a pleasure to be here. And yes, John Alexander is an old friend. I also had him on my podcast, and I am a huge supporter of his citizenship thinking, which is a base to what we do as well, actually. So yeah, like minds for sure.
So to start with, I note that on your homepage, TIE is a comfort zone disruptor.
Yes.
So I'm going to go a bit boldly into this and go, you've been doing this for 16 years.
Yes.
Are you in your own comfort zone?
So that's a very good question. I would say that I definitely was in my own comfort zone, up until the pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm.
And being a business that was based on our only clients were corporates, mm-hmm. and people physically had to go to different locations to be able to disrupt their comfort zones.
Right.
Then the pandemic hit and our business model blew up. And then we very quickly had to, as many people, rebuild and pivot. And it was the hardest, but also the best thing that that could have happened to Ty and to me, I think. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, having started with that one, tell us a little bit about yourself and about Ty and where it is now and what's next.
Okay, so there's a lot of questions there. Maybe I start with me and why I set it up, I suppose. What Ty is we help people go from can to do, and we create that space for everyone to find their unique particular power to make meaningful change. And we do that by disrupting comfort zones. But I think why I set it up, my accent's Canadian, but I was born in South Africa. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Canada. But that global, my parents are British as well, live in Brazil. I'm talking to you from Olinda, Brazil, where I've lived for 17 years. And my, childhood and growing up, I was very exposed to diverse backgrounds, to my family come from the helping people industries. So they, there was a lot of talk around humanity, challenging the system, a lot of purpose. And the reason why this started to become a thing was I studied business. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting in the classroom in business school and people would chant, the main goal of business is to make money. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling, okay, am I in the right place? This is so crazy. This just doesn't gel with me. And this was back in 2001. So it was a long time ago. But having had that experience of purpose, passion, striving to make things better, there seemed to be a disconnect even then for me. My uncle was Nelson Mandela's doctor when he came out of prison and started negotiations with the apartheid government. And my family in South Africa were really involved in the anti-apartheid struggle. And my uncle was one of the most inspirational people I knew. I mean, having grown up in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, where, to be honest, I didn't have a lot of challenges, hearing the stories of the struggle and mm-hmm. protests and being covered in purple paint and, you know, it was really moving. But it was actually at his celebration of life that really opened my eyes to, okay, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. And I realized the reason why he was so inspirational, when I looked around that room, there were a sea of faces. Mm-hmm. There were so many people from so many backgrounds, from the health minister with his two bodyguards to, you know, medical colleagues, family members, and numerous people from the shanty towns. And a couple of people did stand up and tell incredibly moving stories of how my uncle was this light at a very dark time in their lives. So one person saying that no other doctor spoke in the local language. They just spoke English, or Afrikaans to people who could only speak Xhosa or, you know, one of the other local languages, and treated them like animals rather than human beings. And there was another story of a woman, this big black woman who went up to the front, and she was this force of nature. And she said, I was in jail. I was in a black jail during apartheid. And Neil not only risked his life to go to that part of town, that's a black part of town, but went to the jail and then passed chocolates. And on the inside of those chocolates was saying stories of what was happening on the outside. And she said, you know, not very many people were willing to do that, and he did. And I thought, you know what? The reason why he was such an inspirational person was because he stepped out of his silo, out of his comfort zone.
Right.
He expanded his personal circle. And I realized how siloed we get in our day-to-day lives and how important it is for us to step out of those silos, broaden our horizons, push ourselves in new ways so that we can be better, but also touch other people along the way. And so that's why I set up Thai now, as you say, 17, 18 years ago.
Okay. And so what is it now? What is Thai? What is Thai about?
Thai is still about creating that space for people to find their unique power. That has never changed. Mm-hmm. What I realized when the pandemic hit, our essence was still the same. People are still desperately looking for opportunities to broaden their horizons, to step out of their silos, to be able to step out of the hierarchy and push themselves in new ways, to be more and do more. Companies are also still needing to cultivate that agency for their individuals. It's really, I just got off a call with Santander. We're about to kick off a project. And they said, you know, the only way, they said a hugely high percent of individuals are only promoted within their actual divisions. Mm-hmm. You know, to get, and so to be able to, to be able to step out of that, it's very hard. And we need to provide those opportunities for people to be able to step into bigger spaces, to be able to do more, be more, see more about what they're capable of, to then help realize more of their purpose, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so companies are looking for those opportunities as well to help their people grow and do different things. And so Thai is that, but the way that it works, rather than before, where we sent individuals on immersive experiences where they would then be immersed in Malawi or Ghana or Myanmar or wherever they might be for 30 days and they would crack a challenge. Now we have cohorts of people, which is beautiful. And like I say, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. Every obstacle, there is the way. And many times when you have to rebuild, you become better, and actually growth and improvement is often as a result of these challenges, right? We see so many examples of that. And so basically we had to kind of take our own medicine. You know, we're teaching, if you like, or providing people the opportunity to be able to do that. And we had to do it ourselves during the pandemic. And now we've created this cohort, this program, which runs for 6 weeks. It's six people. And basically, it's an opportunity for six people within a company, within a division, within, you know, a global network, but at a company. And they have the opportunity to be able to crack a challenge together in a very short amount of time, with limited time, limited resources, financial and human. They need to step out of the realms of how they normally work. They need to rely on each other, and they need to collaborate. And they need to crack that challenge and provide a real tangible solution for that organization in a very short amount of time. And that's how it works. We work with companies. We also do work with individuals. So we have Thai Accelerator. We do that a couple of times a year, where we pull together a team of people who don't have anything in common with each other, other than the fact they're seasoned professionals and quite senior. And they will come from all over the world, and they have the opportunity to work with other like-minded souls, professionals who they wouldn't normally have the chance to work with. And it brings a cohort of people together to do the same thing.
Okay. And when you run these 6 week, six person cohorts to crack a challenge, are those challenges, and you mentioned that typically within an organization, the cohort, Are they still focused on social challenges outside of the company?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So they're global challenges.
An example of the sort of thing a cohort might work on.
So one of the most recent ones actually that we've done, which is super high profile and it's exciting because Santander is about to take the next leg. It's almost like a marathon or like we have, or not a marathon, but sort of like a relay race. So we sort of, they take a baton and then we work off of the projects. To give you an example of our first ever one with this organization was with a guy called Trevor. And the reason I'm doing this is because you can see where it started and then we had the cohort work on it. But it's a fascinating result. Trevor, you know, he was a designer at the agency Wieden & Kennedy. So he worked on Nike ads, spending his time on InDesign, designing really cool ads. Doesn't obviously usually have the opportunity for thinking strategically or driving projects. You know, he is the designer. Well, anyway, he found himself in Malawi working with an organization called Hestian. And Hestian works with fuel-efficient cooking. Why? Well, one of the leading cause of death for children under five are respiratory, lower tract respiratory infections due to smoke inhalation. Mm-hmm. And the second leading cause of death for adults is the same thing. More people die from lower tract respiratory infections than HIV and malaria combined, I think. It's huge. Wow. Also, we have the problem with, obviously, the CO2 destroying forests. There's a lot of reasons why we need to stop cutting down so many trees and burning fuel in that way. And they've created these really affordable clay stoves. Now, they don't have a huge return on investment financially, but they do have an incredible return on investment when you look at the health of individuals and the health of the planet. In 2 years before Trevor got to Malawi, they had sold 500 stoves. And they were saying, the brief was basically, we need to make these sexy. We need to get people to buy these stoves. Just use them, you know. In 30 days, Trevor, you know, he's not a strategist. He doesn't come from an international development background. He just used his gut instinct, understood the situation, talked to the locals, understood what was happening. In 30 days, he managed to get 10,000 stoves into circulation. And this is using the skills that he has from the private sector to be able to do that. Now, what was interesting is because of that work that Trevor did, by 2020, Malawi had the goal to have 2 million stoves in circulation. And actually, they did that based on the work that Trevor had created. What that then meant, and this is where it gets really crazy and big, what that meant was in September of last year, September the 26th, I think it was, there was the high energy level dialogue meeting at the UN where all countries were coming together to talk about energy. Mm-hmm. 3 billion people around the world still to this day, right now, maybe a little bit less, maybe it's 2.6 billion, but anyway, it's a lot of people around the world are still cooking with open pit fires in this way.
Right.
We need to have more people, using these clay stoves. The thing is who has the louder voice at these huge meetings? Obviously, solar, electric, gas, oil. These clay stoves don't have a voice. And Malawi was chosen because of these 2 million stoves. They were chosen to represent these 3 billion people around the world at this meeting.
Yep.
Malawi doesn't have a budget. They don't have any idea how to position this. So Thai was asked to get involved. So we pulled together 6 people from around the world. We had the CEO of iClimate Earth. So if you Google that, they're an incredible investment company. We had the MD of Una Terra, which is also a venture capitalist company. We had a woman, head of operations based in Switzerland from another massive company. Anyway, we had 6 people, you know, Australia, England, Switzerland. These 6 highly high-level individuals came together. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they wanted to be pushed out of their comfort zones, think in different ways, broaden their horizons, do something different, and use what they know to be able to impact the world, but also gaining all of this exposure and opportunity at the same time. What happened was this team came together. It ended up being the president of Malawi that went to this high-level energy meeting to share what Malawi is doing. And this team pulled together the positioning. They pulled together a video. They pulled together the script. They managed to pull together a pledge, which then was presented at the COP26. Nicola Sturgeon signed the pledge Also, they got money that was invested as a result of it. And so that just goes to show, from something that was very small, it was Trevor, the designer, who went out to Malawi to help get some, you know, clay stoves to be sexy and adopted, has turned into Nicola Sturgeon signing a pledge, the president of Malawi representing these 3 billion people around the world. And that just goes to show, again, touching a little bit on John Alexander's positioning, you know, we are all citizens and we are all in this world together. And it's really important for all of us to be able to contribute in our way to be able to make it different. And we are better, strong, we are stronger together. And I think that's what TIE is all about. It's about cross-sector partnerships. It's about bringing different sectors and different people together. And this just goes to show the power of that. And so that's what we do. So the next project is now going to be with Santander, and it's essentially taking this one step further. So how can this become more strategic? How can it sort of build?
So having successfully pivoted in a very challenging time, well done. And you've just given a fantastic case study of where you're generating real scalable difference. What's next?
What's next? Well, I think, you know, I liked your question, what's next, because I read it in two ways, you know, what's next for TIE, but then also what's next in this, you know, what comes next in the world? Like, yes, where are we at right now?
Yeah.
You know, and I feel, you know, there's a lot, I write a lot of articles and I'm getting asked to write a lot about leadership and purpose. You know, I'm going to be on a panel in London. I'm going to be going to London soon. I've got a number of talks that I'm giving, and I'm on this panel. And I feel, you know, purpose is something that you talk about a lot. And obviously that's a huge part of what we do. And I feel like the importance of a clear purpose for companies, you know, that's kind of, a lot of companies have adopted that. You know, a lot of people know that already, you know. I feel like the gap in the thinking is leadership. And understanding the importance and putting that emphasis, you know, we're talking about collaboration, but we've lost the importance of the individual leader. And, you know, the world is changing really quickly. Okay. We all know there's a lot of talk of VUCA, right? So volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous world. It's more interconnected. It's fluid. Leadership, you know, when we think of the industrial age, leadership, you know, it didn't need to be. It could be monolithic and didactic and, you know, command and control. But now the world has changed in a huge way. Mm-hmm. And we need leaders who are, you know, able to transcend adversity, take calculated risks, be empathetic, embrace diversity, are culturally intelligent, human. Again, back to what John Alexander talked about, you know, human. And so as we move to this age of collaboration, how can we get these companies? I talked about, you know, in my business school in 2001, we're, you know, chanting the main goal of business is to make money. Mm-hmm. Is it? Is that, are we just focused on this old age of competition? Is it about power and aggression and competition? Or if we're moving to this world of, or this era of collaboration, citizenship, how can we get companies to really understand the way that we get there is through leadership? It's through getting individuals to unearth their purpose, understand what makes them shine so that they can then use what they're all about to make change. And then you've got teams that are full of people who are really connected to whatever it is that they're working on. And they've got this ability to be empathetic, flexible. And so, you know, we're about disrupting people's comfort zones. What's next for us? You know, it's helping more companies understand this is urgent, actually. You know, we need more leaders to develop those competencies that are so vital in today's world. And how do we get there? You know, how do you develop cultural intelligence? You can't do it through every, you know, traditional learning. You can only do it by immersing yourself in other places, other people, working with other people that are different, understanding the importance of diversity and difference, embracing diversity. That's where the world is going. And we need these softer skills, if you like, competencies of leadership. And companies need to recognize that need. And so we you know, what's next for us? We're on a mission. It's great because the, you know, it's very cohort. It's very, it's a great way to kind of bring a lot of these groups of people around companies together again, where obviously the pandemic, made things very difficult, but it's obviously a lot, it's a lot more important than that from the point of view of developing these competencies. So that's what I'm grappling with and I'm noodling over, and I'm having, you know, I'm writing articles on it as well, just because, you know, what does this look like and how do we do that? And, you know, how do we get companies to get out of the way as well? You know, how do we get them to listen to the organization, listen to the people, understand what's happening, be flexible? And what does that look like, and how can we have more of that? So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's
getting there. And so as you would appreciate, having looked at some of my work, is very much aligned with what you're talking about, both in terms of purpose-led leaders and in terms of a new form of leadership I refer to as open leadership. And if you look at all the competencies that you have, so the one level is you can tilt the prism through which you view what your organization provides to rising stars and growing leaders and help them develop these things through the opportunities you provide them. At the top level, I guess my question is, let's make the radical leap to the idea that CEOs and C-suite leaders have all these competencies. They've got them all. They have all of the traits, competencies, skills that are what we need for the leaders of today and tomorrow. Mm. What then is the role of a leader, particularly at the top of a company?
Well, I think it's to empower the other people. I don't believe that change happens from the top. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe that it's the CEO driving the change of the company. I actually would argue that it's the middle management, it's the people that are in the day-to-day in the company that are making the change. I think the challenge is they don't feel empowered. They don't feel like they can. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's imposter syndrome. Maybe, and I also don't believe that the CEO has, because not one person has all of the leadership skills. It's impossible to have everything to be able to make change, right? So it's like, one of my mentors, I did a podcast with him recently. It's a fantastic one, with Jim Carroll. And he talks about, we need gardeners, not mechanics. You know, modern leadership for a modern world, we need gardeners. We need to cultivate that garden. So, and diversity is actually what makes it thrive. So I might be a really great leader from the point of view of helping people, and then someone else is really good at driving and making things happen, and someone else can see the future, and that team of everyone coming together is what actually makes that thrive. And I think as a leader, as a CEO, you need to realize that you don't have all of the answers, and actually you're stronger with a team of people that's super diverse and manages to fill the gaps where you can't and shouldn't probably. And yeah, would be my answer.
I mean, I literally had a call with a CEO of a very large company who I work with, and today, and they're at a really exciting pivot point where their business has been thriving, has done exceptionally well, and they can see that things need to, doing the same thing more of will be fine for years to come, but they're pretty purpose driven.
Yeah.
So they're going, well, the world is changing and the arenas in which we operate are changing. Who do we need to be?
Yeah, great.
And a really fascinating part of such conversations, I'll be generic about those, is that if you've come through the corporate world and you've come through a world of quarterly results and you've come through a world of setting targets and hitting them and being, you know, your original background is in advertising, right? So I love the fact that advertising people talk about strategic, and what they really mean is tactical, generally speaking. And the same occurs in the corporate world. Strategy is just a set of goals strapped together.
Yeah.
And built from the bottom up into some focal points, pillars often they're called. And then they bolt on a purpose on the top of it, maybe.
Yes.
Right? Or a mission. And generally speaking, a mission is a to-do list. If you actually dig into most missions, they're all the things we're going to do. They're the what and the how. What they're not the why.
The why. Mm-hmm.
And the why is what drives us. And in this recent conversation, another one, I looked at it and I was connecting the dots because I know a number of people around this organization, and I have a regular call with the CEO and just said, you know, if what's your vision for the future at the very top level?
Yeah.
What's the future state of your organization? What will it look like? What story will you tell in a few years' time? How about you just then put that into one sentence,
mm-hmm.
and then put it out to the organization and say, I'm going to give you a certain, we're going to take time over this.
Yeah.
And all of this will then flow from the top down. And yeah. the language I've used for years is that my one-line job description of a CEO is the keeper of the vision. Which does go to your point. No, there are two things no one person can have. No one person can have all the skills necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the more relevant one to the sort of command and control conversation is no one person can have all the answers.
Yes, perfect.
So, agreed. Because there's always this assumption of the omnipotent, brilliant CEO.
Yeah.
Right? But actually, the role of the CEO to me is to ask questions of the organization, not to give the answers.
Exactly.
But in order for people to have confidence and clarity around the future, they do need to have a vision. Now, it doesn't have to be one they come up with. That's why I use the phrase keeper of the vision. So I'm just giving you some of my thoughts. Because it can be one that they've worked, you know, and if I look at all those attributes, I'd say the number one attribute has to be humility. The number mm-hmm. two one has to be openness.
Mm-hmm.
The skill they need to deploy is listening.
Yep.
And you know, there is this classic way to observe a new leader in any role, from a school principal to a head of a charity to a head of a, you know, elected president in a country, is what do they do in their first, not even 100 days, what do they do in their first 6 months? I once saw a school principal at my kid's school years ago come in and within a week make a declaration in a country they'd never lived in, make a declaration of my vision for the school is this and we'll do all this year.
Without talking to anyone.
And I went, they'll be gone by the end of the term, and they were gone halfway through the first term. But, you know, the best example I've seen was the global head of a division of an organization moved to the country I lived in just to help the team in that region, and went into the team for that division as a member, not as the head. And they said, I'm not going to say anything for 3 months. I'm just here to listen, and I'm going to go talk to people, and, you know, they'll know my job title because it says on my business card, but I just want to understand what's happening here.
Brilliant.
So I think when we look at this, my take is that leadership is so different. I agree with you. It's so different. And I think in listening to you, it's just helped me articulate some thoughts, is that the number one skill to deploy is listening and posing questions. So
yeah.
You end up with a vision.
Totally.
The only job of the CEO is to listen
and
observe to see is how is this, then the question to ask is once the vision has been, what's the word often used, socialized, once people have got it, they've been part of it, they've created it, and everybody, there's a classic JFK one, you know, asking a cleaner at NASA in the mid-60s, what do you do here? He says, I help put a man on the moon, right? Once everybody is clear and bought into the vision, right?
Yeah.
Then the only job of the CEO is to just listen and make sure that everything that's happening is moving the company towards that.
So I've got two things just to sort of complement what you're saying. The first is, again, Jim Carroll, this podcast I did was just fantastic. He helps people also, companies find their purpose. And he was talking about the importance of a purpose and a North Star for companies. And he said, the way that I can put this into perspective, have you seen Swan Lake? I was like, yeah. He said, so you know, I mean, he knows a lot about, I think it's the 30, anyway, it's one of the scenes. And the black swan does 32 pirouettes, turns.
Yeah.
And he said, why does that, you know, ballerina not fall down? Because she's spotting, right? And so the spotting, obviously you look and then you turn and then you look again and you are spotting. And he said, you know, particularly in a world that we're in right now where there's so much change, it is so important that North Star, that spotting for companies and therefore for the people that work in those companies is so important because they have that North Star. They can stay focused.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people need. They need to connect with it based on their purpose, of course, and they need to focus on it. Also, I had a podcast just last week with, so on my podcast, it's called Thai Unearthed, and it's all about talking about how people are making the world a better place from all different walks of life, parts of the world, etc. And whenever I ask people who work at companies, what company do you admire? I would say, well, I think it's 100% actually. It's always Patagonia.
Yeah.
And so my friend is the head of impact, and it was environment, but now it's citizenship it's community at Patagonia. So I thought, well, I need to have a conversation with her because she's the one driving all of this, and I need to understand. And so it's a great episode. But what, you know, I often ask other people around, you know, what makes a human-centric organization, and what would you say? And I also said, you know, what companies do you admire? And don't say Patagonia. And it was really interesting to hear her out. You know, she, one human centric to her is asking questions, getting out of the way. It's, bringing in the voices of people on the front lines. It's asking not only just people within the company, but also the people who you're either serving or even people that are impacted by the work that you're doing, and bring those voices in. And it was basically rooted in asking questions, listening to the answers, not having the loudest voice, knowing when to bring in the opinions and listening to them. And mm-hmm. I thought that was really, that's where Patagonia is going. They've even changed their purpose. It used to be one, and now it's just, we're in business to save the home planet. And they're, you know, it's interesting, really interesting where they're going.
That's, yeah, it's very cool. Good story. I wonder how many people who are asked that question say, the company I work for.
Good question. And then that's exactly it, right? So then it's back to your point of what is the why? And then, because again, back to my sort of the future, not enough people are spending enough time on them, like the reflection on what is it? Like, are you in the right place? Do you know what you're all about? What makes you tick? Because then obviously if you know that, and then you know that North Star of your company, you've got people and that company's listening to you, right? You know, one thing that really, sorry, and I know that we're coming to the end, but just one thing that also really I find shocking. I'm very lucky that I have two little girls. They're 7 and 11. And I had, I started my company before I had children. So I did not realize how lucky I was that I did that, because I've managed to, one, be incredibly flexible. I have not had to deal with glass ceilings. I have not had to deal with the logistics of having a child and working for a company that is not allowing flexibility to have children. I am now, I'm 44. So many of my friends, female friends, Oxbridge graduates, Ivy League graduates, so many struggling with imposter syndrome. They're not working. They're not making money. They have money because their husbands make a lot of money. They don't feel worthwhile anymore. Why? Because they stopped working because they had children, and not because they chose. It's just logistically, it was impossible. And I find it really crazy when you look at, if we're going to go into sort of, you know, cultural dimension theory, you know, the competitive masculine values or sort of competition, aggression, etc.
Yeah.
These values that we're talking about are much more feminine, aren't they? Now, if I'm not suggesting that men don't have them, but women tend to have them more perhaps, but they're also just, they add a lot of value to a company.
Totally.
And what is just crazy is companies are allowing this insane drain of not only incredible talent from an intellectual point of view, but an essential talent from a competitive point of view. Not talking even about diversity and needing to have 50-50. No, I'm just saying, to get your companies in the place of openness, asking questions, listening to the answers, women are very, very good at that. And we need to figure out how to stop this drain of talent.
Well, I mean, open something for a couple of minutes now is that, so, you know, I mean, there is the concept of feminine, masculine energy, yin yang, and this kind of thing. So these things can sit in both. But the masculine energy, and in fact, toxic masculinity, in corporate worlds also drives into this fear and control dynamic.
Totally.
So one of the reasons why companies like yours thrive is because companies, and you will always, you have a really great concept and it's executed well, and a lot of people want what you do. But one of the reasons you have the opening and the thriving is because you actually said it very early on in the call, right? Companies don't move people around their organization.
Yes.
And they also don't give them the time to develop themselves, right? Well, it's, you know, these things are, you know, at source, these things are rooted at really problematic levels. And we do have to go back to the Milton Friedman thing about the sole purpose of the corporation is to enrich the shareholders, et cetera. And the fact that reality is that the long-term development of a corporation comes from having collaboration rather than competition and blah, blah, blah. And my own one, which I'll just throw in there, is that I talk to people about risk and diversity. And they say, great, diversity, super important. But you know what? Since I did a secondment in London 35 years ago, it really hasn't changed in this city since I moved back here 5 years ago.
In terms of
gender diversity, how has that happened? And gender is one form of diversity. But when we look at, what scares me a lot, and I did a lot of work in Canada, and, you know, you grew up in Canada. Most Canadian corporations are run by white Anglo males in their 50s. Okay. I do resemble that remark. In fact, I am that remark. Or not Anglo, I'm a Scot, but anyway. But since 2008, with the global financial crisis, every board has a focus on risk. And they often have reputational risk and RROCs, reputational risk and oversight committees. They look at commercial risk. They look at everything. I would bet your chief risk officer and your whole risk approach to risk. And I'll say this to leaders and I'll go, is missing one of the greatest risks. Groupthink.
Yeah.
If your entire leadership and your board are made up with the occasional token hire, are made up of people with the same background who all went to Ivy League colleges, who all went to right? You don't have anybody on the team who thinks differently.
Yeah. How do you innovate? How do you innovate?
You can't. And so, you know, this greatest single example of that that pops into my mind right now is there was a company in the 70s that developed patents for digital photography. And just on the screen right now, I've just dug out my 15-year-old digital
camera. Oh, wow.
Nice. I'm going to start going analog again. Well, it's not analog, but I'm going to start going back in time. I also have a film camera here. But one company developed a series of patents that would have given them a 10-year lead on digital photography. And they sat on it for 18 years before they launched their first product. Any want to care to guess what that company was called?
No, I don't know.
Kodak in Rochester.
Kodak, I was going to say Kodak.
Yeah. Because everybody on there was vested in a thought process that our business is based around selling film.
Yeah.
And they thought it would cannibalize it. Now, Rochester is now one of the lowest economic development areas of the top 100 cities in the U.S., metropolitan areas. It's right near the bottom. It's a city founded on vocational education around engineering and science, and companies that do that, including Kodak. Kodak was one of the biggest employers, and it's collapsed. And so that's the danger of not having somebody on there who thinks differently, who comes from a different background, has a different set of life experiences.
I think when
we look at all those things, it's like, you know, when you said that thing, I said, why don't they rotate people around? You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, doing great stuff and some great thoughts. And
thank you for having me. I know. But I just really appreciate the opportunity to finally meet you. And, you know, I loved your podcast with John Alexander. He is I'm a huge fan of his work as well. And we're obviously like-minded. So I appreciate
as I ask my guest, any closing thoughts for listeners?
I would just say if you are capable of much more than you probably think you are. And so embrace that, you know, if you just know you can and time is now and do it. So.
Perfect. It's a pleasure, Philippa. And people can find you at Ty and your podcast.
Yeah. LinkedIn, Philippa White. I'm pretty sure it's Philippa White or Philippa Jane White. I'm not sure anyway on LinkedIn and the internationalexchange.co.uk. Yep.
And your podcast is called?
Oh, podcast is Ty Unearthed. There's some really good ones there.
Okay.
Yeah, Ty Unearthed as an unearthing.
Got it. Okay, enjoy your evening in Brazil.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.